the Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionic Studio, the smarter way to make radio.
Thank you for joining us for the May Roundtable, our second monthly celebration of lockdown listening. I'm Trevor Dan in West Cambridgeshire. Let's see who else has convened around our virtual table, courtesy of IPDTL and Zoom.
Hi, Trevor. It's Matt Deegan. I'm in Earlsfield. I'm the station manager at Fun Kids and the creative director at Folder Media.
Hi, Trevor. Simon Cross down here in Southeast London from Shooting Sharp Productions, maker of various podcasts and radio programmes.
And I'm Anne Charles. I'm currently in South Norfolk. I am a radio production and technology consultant and also one of the organisers of Radio TechCon.
Let's just start by finding out how it's affecting everybody as an individual. I'm going to start with you, Simon, because your business is sports broadcasting, sports production. There is no sport. What the hell are you doing with yourself?
Oddly, it's somewhat of a boom time in audio, I think. Our company makes probably about 50-50 video to audio content. That's pretty much now 100% audio content. The video part of sport is dropped out because there's nothing to see out here. But there's still plenty of hours of sports content to be filled. And we don't do too much live sport. We tend to do debate programs and talk about sports. So even though it's not happening, there's still a hunger out there. And as sort of fans are isolated, there's in some ways more of a reason to do things. We were a bit nervous about bringing back what was effectively a football phone-in 6:06 on 5 Live because there was no games to talk about. It didn't seem the time to say we should sack our manager. Those sort of meat and potato subjects that we usually cover didn't seem relevant, but we brought it back for a one-off. And the phone lines were jammed. People just want to talk football. They can't do that at the game. They can't do that at the pub. They can't even do that sometimes within their own family and certainly with their workmates. So there seemed to be a reason to bring it back. I don't sound too much up ourselves and say it was like a public service. But there were certainly a lot of people that were just really happy to be able to talk football for a couple of hours.
And how's it working in your world in tech?
I'm used to working from home and working from anywhere. So for me, a lot of my life hasn't changed that much, apart from I would normally be away 2 or 3 days a week, traveling all over the country, all over Europe, sometimes all over the world. So obviously that stopped. I have got a phenomenal amount of, you know, all the admin jobs that you're like, yeah, I'll definitely get around to those. And now it's kind of like, oh, damn, I've got to get around to them. So some work has dropped off, face-to-face training, that kind of thing is not happening. Other bits are keeping me ticking over. And the other thing that's happening is that with my Radio TechCon hat on, we had a good chat to everyone in the industry and they were very keen to make sure that the event happened, which is brilliant. So it's definitely happening on the 30th of November. But of course, what's really happening is the team and I are trying to plan effectively two versions of the event in parallel because we cannot say at the moment whether we're going to be in our usual venue, whether it's going to be a super duper virtual conference or what the social distancing rules are going to be. So that's kind of interesting at the moment, just trying to work out the logistics for something that you don't know what the logistics will actually be.
Matt, I guess you're going through something similar with the podcast awards and also with Radio Days Europe that you're involved in. It's kind of difficult to know exactly when we're going to come out of all this and whether you can go ahead with your events.
It is very difficult. For the British Podcast Awards, we've got our nominations on May the 18th, which we announced would be a streamed event. So just putting the finishing touches to that at the moment. For the ceremony, we, similar to Anne, we have two versions of the ceremony. We have a more virtual version and an in-person version. I think we'll get a bit of a steer from Boris on Sunday. I mean, my assumption is any announcements will say pubs are shut until September or something like that, which will make it difficult to do any in-person events, I think, until that point. So, yeah, so you just, you know, you've got to roll with the punches and just come up with something that works. I mean, what we want to do with the awards is to celebrate the sector and provide an opportunity to talk about the sector. And it's a bit harder, but we're going to still do this. We're still going to manage that in a COVID world.
Let's move on then, in that case, to a chat about podcasting before we do live radio. You'll have seen Miranda Sawyer's piece in The Observer saying that, the way I read it, it kind of said this stuff's so popular now that it must have peaked. I wasn't sure whether that made any sense. I mean, you follow podcasts probably more than anyone, Matt. Are there too many now?
I think what it was sort of saying was it's the end of that kind of first phase of podcasting where individuals were more likely to be able to have a hit and it was pretty democratic and anybody could do it. You know, the big boys have rolled in, and whilst, you know, a kitchen show can still be successful, what's your marketing? You know, how do you reach an audience and tell them that you exist? It's much more difficult, I think, to stumble across indie podcasts than it used to be. I think that's what it's saying. It's professionalization sounds the wrong word because there's a huge amount of professional indie shows, but you know, large media companies are in this space spending significant amounts of money, hundreds of thousands of pounds on shows, which just means it's a different kind of medium than it was. I mean, what we know, listeners like quality and they like something that talks to them individually about their interests and their tastes. And I think there are more people out there doing it. I think the other bit is we're getting to a point where a more mainstream audience are listening to shows, and they have different desires, I think, than early adopters maybe had early on. And your podcasting still hasn't had that many breakout mass market hits, but I think there's more of that happening now. We're going in that direction, whether that's talent or format, or the kinds of producers who are making things. And that's going to change, you know, what people listen to.
And are you listening to more podcasts than you used to? Perhaps less live radio? Is it the other way around?
I can read statistics so that I know I'm unusual in my listening, in that I do listen to more podcasts than live radio. That partly happened when I started travelling so much internationally. It's interesting, Matt, that you say it's the end of the beginning, because it feels like that happened a while ago, because I think my point for that is when you no longer had to explain what a podcast was all the time. I mean, we hate to mention Serial, but I think that was probably the point where you stopped having to say, oh, podcast, you know, it's sort of like a downloadable version of radio, but it's not.
Yeah, I mean, so the latest Midas data is 10 million people listen to podcasts, which I think is still quite small. Yeah, 50, 60 million people in the country. 10 million is an amazing number, and it's, you know, it's more people than listen to Heart, for example, as a snapshot. So it's not like it's a small number of people listening to podcasts. But I think we're at the point now where that's going to continue to grow, and probably at a faster rate, and it will mainstream faster. I think now there's enough of an audience that people can invest significant amounts of time and money into making big shows designed to be successful and make cash.
Anne's absolutely right. Once Serial came along, people knew what a podcast was. But there's still the prevailing question of how do I get that? Where do I get that? Apple Podcasts, that's what people used to call iTunes, is still where the majority of the people that listen to my podcast get it from. Spotify is obviously creeping up, but very, very, very slowly. And there's a dozen other ones. And then there's BBC Sounds. And where does that come into this? And then quite often people will just sort of see a social media link and click it and listen to it that way. And they're not even sure where they're hearing it from. They would say, I'm hearing it on my phone. I think there's still a bit of ignorance out there about how you actually access podcasts.
Matt, do you think that all this home working, you know, speaking from under a duvet in your bedroom and all the rest of it, is going to change the way we do broadcasting?
I think so. I think everyone knew you could do all these things, and I don't think anyone was surprised about that. Now, we didn't have to do these things. I think we had an impression of what a Skype was like, and, oh, it's a bit rubbish, isn't it? Let's not bother with it. Whereas actually now you're forced to, you kind of go, actually, all this is very good, and I can tweak it to make it even better. For our children's radio station, Fun Kids, all our presenters are at home, and then remote voice tracking. And it's fine. And there are some presenters who we probably drag into the studio that we don't need to, and they live far away and it's not really fair on them. Will they be coming back into the studio when we're fit? Maybe not. I don't know. We'll have a discussion with them. I think on radio playout, there's an interesting bit about where your playout machines come from. So for Fun Kids, it comes out of our studios in Holborn, but Fun Kids Junior comes from the RCS cloud. And actually, if you were doing it again, you'd probably put everything in the cloud to start with. So I think it is accelerating some of those decisions as you realise actually that the tech has caught up with our imaginations.
Simon, what is the point now we've tried doing all these programmes at distance? What is the point of bringing everybody into a studio? And you do a lot of conversation programmes, panel shows. Do you think you'll do fewer of them with everybody together in the same room?
I think there's become a audio threshold that has become lower throughout the whole part of this. Whether that acceptance continues after the lockout, I suppose audio purists will be tearing their hair out about what's going on with some of the quality and the ways of doing things. But at the same time, maybe we're now starting to get used to visually that sort of Zoom or our house party conference look that even mainstream television have been adopting. And certainly in audio terms, I think there's going to be a lot of people who, through this period, have got themselves good microphones, sorted themselves out a little bit with a bit of technology, very simple downloads. And I think that it will change things. I think there'll be far more of an acceptance of, do I really have to come in for that? And it's obviously much better money for everybody because, you know, we're paying people the same fee and they've got to cut out a couple of hours of travel time. So I think economics will drive that as well.
As an engineer, Anne, do you think that people have been a bit too finicky about what we used to call quality sound? You know, I've got to do this in quality, people would say. Is that going away now?
Well, we ran a session at TechCon several years ago called Let's Get Rid of Radio Stations. And it was a debate along the lines of, are we technically and personally ready for the idea that we don't need a radio station anymore? For live broadcast, you still do need, at the moment, we're limited by the fact you need a hub where your lines are coming in and your lines are going out. I think it's interesting. We've always had broadcasters who've been at home. That's not unusual. There are plenty of presenters who have got the right setups and have been presenting at home for years. But you also have to look at podcasters and things like mobile journalists. And we've got the staff who are paying attention to technology and have acquired the skills to do mobile journalism, use smartphones, hack their kit together to make things sound really good in confined spaces. And then we've got the people who haven't bothered to get those skills. And I'm sure that many of us have spent a lot of time helping friends out. And part of me, my bad fairy side, is kind of like, why am I spending so long helping you out for free when I've actually acquired these skills over years and you haven't bothered? So hopefully it'll be another point where radio people need to realise that they have to understand their technology if they want to make good programmes. And I think so long as it sounds good, then it can and should come from anywhere. You've always got to think about your backup options. If you're mainly doing voice tracking at a radio station, then you've already got a backup option anyway. So I don't really think there's been such a thing against broadcasting from home and remotely, and especially in radio, because we're used to doing outside broadcasts anyway.
I think it's a boom for getting good guests because people are mainly at home at the moment and would quite like something to do. We're making a podcast series for MTV at the moment called Nappy Days, which is a kind of a parenting podcast. I had some great guests, and we've sent some mics and some headsets and some of those things around to them to get them in better quality. But even them recording it through a Zoom or similar and holding up a phone to their mouth and just hitting voice record on there, it's really good. It's really good. And actually, I think sometimes we produce things in a way they've always been produced. Like, you must come to a building and to a studio and it must be like this, and that's what proper is. Whereas actually that adds a lot of, as Anne was saying, that adds a lot to barriers to making something.
I went to America last year to do a TV series, and a big name American sports star wanted $10,000 for an interview. So we got one of his cheaper teammates. However, a couple of weeks ago, he was pretty happy to do a free interview on Skype because he was just bored and hadn't been out for a while. And yeah, sure, whatever you want. And likewise, a big Premier League football team, which I won't mention, but it's the team in Manchester that doesn't play in red, were very, very willing to give us some of their first team players to be interviewed, where you could spend a whole season trying to get 5 minutes with Raheem Sterling. Suddenly we're able to talk to some of their star players, which is great. And this is not being critical of them. They haven't got anything to do. So it's really good that we're, as Matt says, able to access guests and for considerable amounts of time as well. We can talk to somebody now for an hour where we might have been hurried off after 3 or 4 minutes before.
It's the Radio Today Roundtable for May 2020. And we'll have a small commercial message and be right back with you.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Mikasa.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionic Studio. Listening, watching, reacting to and learning from every spoken word, caller, tweet and SMS to unmix, unlock and understand your content. The Bionic Studio transforms everything about radio except the way you make it.
Radio Today. Dan Charles is here, so is Matt Deegan, so is Simon Cross. When I say here, I of course mean there. Let's talk about the big radio news of the last few weeks, which is the announcement of the schedule for Times Radio. You wrote, if I may be a bit flattering, Matt, a very succinct and well-argued piece, which people can read, so you don't need to tell us what you said in your blog. But I can summarise it, I think, as if they think they're competing with Radio 4, they've got another think coming.
Yeah, and it's weird whenever I write blog posts, there's loads which no one pays any attention to, and then something just catches the imagination, which this one did. And a few people from the Times got in touch and said, "Oh, yeah, you're right. We're not about targeting Radio 4. We're about doing our own thing." And I really hope that's true. The ratings are the danger, though. They are the thing which distracts you. And people not making the radio station who are in that business are going to look to compare it to things. And it's a shame because it's going to be difficult to establish that operation and make it successful in traditional terms. That's going to be hard. And it's nothing to do with the quality of the product that they make or what they're doing. That's just kind of the nature of the world today. 30 years ago, you turned on a radio station, local press turned up, you had some balloons, that was it. 20% reach, no trouble. Doesn't quite work like that anymore. And I think that's the challenge for them. I think it's a great, if they're truly focused on driving subscription revenue for the Times, which you don't need many subscribers for it to pay back and to be a good thing, then that's totally the right thing to do. Whether they can keep that focus, though, that's going to be the big challenge.
Apart from the lack of advertising, what will be different, do you think, between Times Radio and LBC and Times Radio and Talk Radio?
So my hunch would be less phone-in, less news wheel, and more broader topics, more thoughts on things, and hopefully built programming. They're already making quite a lot of built programming in the podcasts, which are really good. I'd hope some of that eked in. But I think the issue with the talent, I think all the talent are solid people, but there aren't any stars. So again, that's not going to get in the way of producing great shows and great content. It is a bit of a thing that encumbers you from capturing press coverage. And that's their other problem. Like, other newspapers and magazines probably aren't going to write about Times Radio other than, you know, News Corp products. And obviously the radio is not going to talk about them too. And even telly's going to be a little bit snooty. So they've got, there are a lot of tough things they've got to overcome while staying focused on doing a good job, which, you know, they're all talented people. The radio side's talented, the press side's talented, Stig's a good guy. There's nothing to stop them making great content, but getting that to cut through is going to be tough.
And are you looking forward to it?
Yeah, I am. Years ago when I was a speech radio producer, there was the kind of Channel 4 radio thing on the horizon. And in those days, if you worked in speech radio, you either worked for the BBC or you worked for an indie that made programmes for the BBC. And there was no market for your skills, actually. And now we've got podcasting and we've got things like Times Radio coming along. So there's potential for people who can actually make great speech content to have a bit more of a career and maybe get a bit more money for what they do. Who knows? I think, of course, they're trying to compete with the BBC. That would be obvious, right? Why would you want to set up a speech radio station, which is an expensive thing? Because it's not a talk radio station like talk radio, is it? They are trying to do proper programmes with presenters and content and hopefully build in some of the stuff that they've got from their podcasts. I tell you who I haven't seen on the lineup yet that I'd really like to see. My fantasy schedule for Times Radio would include Catelyn Moran doing either Weekend Breakfast or 9 till 12 on a Saturday would feel like a really good slot, and maybe have something that you can reversion really easily into a podcast. I'm also kind of interested that they've got this split for breakfast. They're doing the Monday to Thursday and then Friday to Sunday thing, which is, I suppose, just based around the contracts and the availability of their stars. And then Tim Lavelle in charge is a good move. He's got a really solid background, was Newsround editor for quite a long time, and then Blue Peter, and then Five Live. So that's a good move for him as well.
Simon, it was announced this week that Mike Carr is leaving Five Live. Do you expect him to join Times Radio?
Well, Mike is cut from the world of sport. Not many people, I've got no inside info on this, but not many people get the immediate effect treatment from the BBC, do they? But he has gone very quickly. But there's no indication yet whether Times Radio will go into the world of sport. And why should they, when within even their own, under their own umbrella, they do have Talk Sport and Talk Sport 2, and Five Live are doing what they're doing. There was probably not really much room in that marketplace for live sport. But for Times Radio, it's interesting to see their lineup. There are no stars. Scala Radio launched, didn't they, with lots of familiar faces and even people who were sort of going to be doing shows but weren't really part of their core daytime lineup. Times Radio have immediately jumped in with a load of female presenters, which is great. They're allowed to start anew, aren't they? So they haven't inherited the problems that other radio stations have had of mistakes being made decades ago with all male lineups, that they've had to slowly try to bring in more women. But Times Radio seem to have started afresh, and good to see a very, very good representation for that.
I was a bit disappointed that Chris Mason didn't eventually transition over to Times Radio, because I believe that there were advanced discussions, and I think he would have been rather good on that lineup.
Well, he would be, but he's also really good where he is now, right? I just think that probably the BBC need to recognise that and give him something more of his own vehicle. A couple of weeks ago, he popped up to do a quick hit on a programme I was producing, and the presenter was saying, "Oh, do we really need to talk to this?" And I said, "Oh, don't worry, this guy's good radio, because he lights up the airwaves as soon as he comes on."
Yeah, also, I saw on Facebook that Hussein Husseini has joined Times Radio to be the sort of EP of mornings and breakfast as well.
Oh, and that'll be a great thing. Let's find out what our panellists have been listening to after we've heard, I think, from Stuart Clarkson.
Thank you, Trevor. Yes, in these lockdown days we're living in, you might still be looking for a solution to get yourself on the air from home or to connect with guests for your radio show or your podcast. Clean Feed is one such solution, which is worth a try. There is a completely free version to get you started within minutes, and it's really good quality, just using a browser, no software to download or anything like that. You send a link, somebody at the other end clicks on it, and they connect with you in decent quality. It is really simple to use, as I said, and you can find out more about it at cleanfeed.net. That's cleanfeed.net. Trevor, back to you.
So it's time to find out what everybody's been listening to, either live or online. Let's start with Anne. What's your first choice?
My first choice is hopefully something that lots of people have been listening to, the coronavirus newscast, formerly Brexit cast, formerly election cast, formerly newscast. They've rolled that format into being a coronavirus update. It's a little bit hit and miss at times, but it still does have the features of having a team who are at the centre of a story, who are reacting to each other. And also it means that you can somewhat outsource some of your worrying, because you can listen to that and have an update once a day without having to feel that you've got to follow the story every second of every moment. But the clip that I've selected was from a few weeks ago, and they had an amazing interview with someone who was a palliative care doctor, and she was talking about what happens when you die on a ventilator.
As we become progressively less well with something that attacks our lungs like this, what happens is the oxygen levels in our blood will drop, and it gets progressively more and more difficult to stay awake. So while people are awake, they'll be feeling breathless. We are using quite strong drugs to manage their breathlessness and take that sense of being hungry for air away from them. But gradually, as the oxygen levels drop, they will become just naturally more and more sleepy, and they will lapse into a state of unconsciousness. So these people who we love are not going to be awake and gasping for breath to their last breath. They are going to be gradually more sleepy. They are going to lapse into unconsciousness. If they're on a ventilator already, they will have been made unconscious by drugs in order to tolerate being on the ventilator. So we shouldn't have a picture of these people who we love awake to their last breath, terrified, panting, worrying about us, wondering about us. They will, by their last breath, be unaware of their surroundings, unaware of who is around them at all. And actually, at that point, the experience that's really awful is for those of us who love them, who are separated from them, waiting for that dreadful news.
The coronavirus newscast from the BBC.
What is this virus? How does it spread? How do we protect ourselves and our loved ones?
I got some test results back for coronavirus, and it came back positive.
We're just kind of trying to feel our way into this new normal.
I must level with you, level with the British public. Many more families are going to lose loved ones before their time.
Relax, we're doing great. It all will pass.
Matt, let's go on to your first choice, which I think is a bit more general.
Yes, I listen to a lot of radio anyway, but I think in this moment, good old-fashioned solid music radio does exactly what it's supposed to do, which is raise the mood. And it's very easy if you're on TweetDeck all day or you've got the news on in the mornings to be sort of corona overload. But putting on, whether that's Greg James in the morning on Radio 1 or Will Manning on Capital, I think it just ups your mood, makes you feel good. Just hearing pop records is absolutely fine, I think, at the moment too. And things that we've also been listening to, our evenings have changed a little bit. Obviously, we're at home all the time. Magic Chilled, Smooth Chill and Jazz FM are making regular appearances to aid that part of the day too. So I think just, you know, if you're having trouble out there or you're a bit information overload, just whack on some music radio.
Given that we do all have a few opportunities to listen to music radio that perhaps we haven't had for a little while, give us one show that you think we would be particularly delighted by.
I think if you're not a regular Capital listener, I think listening to Will Manning, who does mid-mornings, is something good to tune to. You know, it's tight, bright pop radio, but there's good personality in those links. And he's a great presenter.
Lizzo on Capital. Hey, have you heard about this?
Summertime Ball with
Barclaycard. I'm just having the best time reading Twitter this morning. Like Nicole, who just goes, what the blah, 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 and just gone mad on her keyboard. Lily says, this is the best. Our dreams have come true. Thank you, Capital. So, the best of Capital Summertime Ball with Barclaycard's happening on Saturday, May the 16th at 5 p.m. That's right. The main show might be cancelled this year, but it doesn't mean we can't bring you some of the best bits that have happened over the last 11 years of the UK's biggest summer party. Saturday, May 16th, get that in your phone, 5 p.m, get your friends ready on Zoom to watch this together. You can listen on Capital, you can watch on Global Player, Sky One and on YouTube.
There's Will Manning on Capital. Simon Cross, your first choice.
Well, as production and making programmes increases, actual consumption of programs and podcasts is decreasing, right? Because we're not going anywhere. So they're listening in the car, they're listening on the way to the studio and to work is just not there anymore. But I've chosen something which is sort of very much created of where we are right now. I think this podcast wouldn't have existed were we not in lockdown, and it may not go on much longer afterwards. It is loosely about sport, but like all good podcasts about sport, it goes into other areas as well. You'll know, Trevor, about the Tuesday Club being back a year and a half after their last episode. They've come back. Alan Davis, a brilliant podcaster. You don't have to be an Arsenal fan, though. That's my point. You don't have to be an Arsenal fan to enjoy the Tuesday Club, which is a podcast about Arsenal Football Club. And you don't have to be Welsh to enjoy what I'm going to suggest now, which is three Welshmen, Ellis James, Stefan Guerrero, and most importantly, in my opinion, for this podcast, Mike Bubbins, who is fantastic. He's a comic actor from Wales. I'm afraid, and as somebody who gets kind of employed sometimes to come up with formats, this is one of the traditional kind of all chums together podcasts, as Miranda Sawyer calls them. And sometimes you do default to three good people having a chat amongst themselves, and they're amongst friends. It's a lovely combo of nostalgia, gentle humour, and copyright infringement, as they all pick their favourite YouTube clips and talk about them, and they're mostly about sport.
And here they are talking about an England football match in 1953.
Here they go again, with some of the most perfect teamwork ever seen on the green grass of Wembley. Puskas goes down to Johnson's tackle, but the Hungarian captain slips it over to Hidikuti, who shakes the net with goal number two.
Billy Wright was regarded as the best defender in the world. That drag back from Ferenc Puskas, he doesn't know what's going on, and he's never seen football like that before. They had a deep-lying centre-forward. They didn't know what to do because they thought, well, he's too deep for us to man-mark him. So if we go and follow him, we're then out of position.
Yeah.
But if we don't follow him, he's got all this time and space. And crucially, he is fucking brilliant. They just had no idea what to do. And they were constantly being drawn out of position. And Hungary just murder them. I mean, and the English FA assumed that it was a bad day at the office and that it was some sort
completely
of...
completely outplayed.
Yeah, and it was some sort of, you know, 35 shots to 5. And it was this sort of this aberration, and they were like, listen, you know, we're originators of the game. We invented football. What they did was they were like, all right, then we'll play you again. We'll play you out in Budapest next year. And they got 7-1.
So that's the socially distant sports bar. Back to you, Anne, for your second choice.
So my second choice is Willosophy, where he interviews M. Russiano. So Will Anderson is an Australian comedian, former radio person. He has very long form interviews with people each week, and I don't listen to all of them because I don't want to spend an hour and a half to 2 hours with people I don't know. But every so often, because he used to work in radio, he will have a radio person. He recently interviewed Christian O'Connell, formerly of this parish, which is worth a listen as well. But M. Russiano has been a radio presenter in Australia. I used to listen to her show. It was amazing, very funny, very feminist, very feisty, really good listen. She was rather put through the mill by the way the industry works over there. And she does admit in the podcast that some of it was her fault. So an interesting conversation between the two of them around her career, what's happening in radio in Australia, and also the importance of people who are creative and how important it is for us to charge for our work and the employment opportunities that then come out of that, especially in this time at the moment where lots of comedians aren't able to tour shows and bring in the income and employ all the people they'd normally employ. But the clip I've picked is where both of them are reminding each other that they should never, ever set foot in radio ever again.
For me, yeah, that festival, it would have been my 25th year in a row doing a show at the festival. Mm. It's the anchor of my year. It's what everything else revolves around. And it is so closely tied to my identity and what it is that I do, that I knew that I had to do something so that I didn't get obsessed by those sort of thoughts and start thinking about that I wouldn't be able to pay my mortgage and what was I going to do and shit, I shouldn't have fucking stopped doing radio. Really, this was bad.
Never say that again. Never think that, because you know it's the best decision you made.
Well, there's nothing like being completely unemployed with no income and still not wanting to go back to it to let you know that you've made the right decision.
I'm the same. I walked away from breakfast radio money in Sydney, and I don't even know if I'm going to pay my mortgage next month, but I still don't regret it.
I'm doing shows in my attic and I still don't regret it.
I've got a PayPal GoFundMe account and I still don't regret it.
Some very candid stuff from Willosophy. Thank you very much. And Charles, Matt Deegan, your second choice.
So I found in lockdown that I don't have a lot of time to myself. I'm at home with my girlfriend and we're working in separate rooms, obviously spending time with each other. Then Zoom calls, and I'm listening to quite a lot of fun kids, bits and pieces. And so I don't have a lot of time for podcast listening, except when I walked to the Sainsbury's for my weekly shop, a thing I've never particularly done before. And then I get to queue to go in, and then I get to be in Sainsbury's for half an hour to do the big shop. And that's my only time to listen to something I kind of choose to in a podcast. And if I have to pick one podcast off my list that's sort of filling up, it's Hamish and Andy, again from Australia. They were very successful radio presenters, the sort of Anton Deck of Australia. And now they do a very successful kind of number one weekly podcast. And it kind of combines what I love about great radio with the podcast medium. And so they have sort of running storylines, recurring features. And the thing that actually lots of podcasters don't do, which I think is a shame, is like loads and loads of listener involvement and getting them in and getting them involved with things. And it just makes me laugh and it makes me smile for that Sainsbury's trip. And the clip I think we're going to listen to is a recurring feature about power moves.
Bragging is a way to gain power. That's why people do it. And they think it gives them power.
And if you can cut someone down when they're on their way to a powerful position,
you
really
can absorb that power.
Yeah.
Very much, I believe, the martial arts, Tai Chi Chi, what is that one, where you use that opponent's body weight if they come at you, attacking you. You know, you
Taekwondo?
Use probably like jiu-jitsu as well, but anything where you use their body weight against them.
Yes.
So you go with the momentum.
Yep.
And then,
sumo's a bit of that.
Now who's in rear guard? Me, the guy you thought you were bragging to. So I think this has got a bit of this. When somebody tells you a fact about themselves, which is usually kind of a boring person, I suppose, that just likes the conversation to be just, you know, throwing out arbitrary facts like, oh, you know, I used to really like origami as a kid or something, just no one needed to know. Always say thoughtfully, that explains a lot.
Always reliable. Hamish and Andy, imagine Matt with his headphones on, standing socially distant outside the Sainsbury's in southeast London. Final choice from Simon Cross, not the Untouchables, but the Rewatchables.
Yes, from the US podcast giant, The Ringer. Again, I've chosen this for this particular episode of your programme because it's something which, even though it has been going long before the lockdown, I think it's a podcast for the lockdown. The Rewatchables simply means, and it's not an especially original idea, other people have done this to various degrees of success, is rewatching old films. What I like about this one is it's films that you've seen. It's not especially arty. They do the latest episodes on Gladiator. They do The Notebook, Basic Instinct, Titanic, Ferris Bueller's Day Off is a good episode. But it features Bill Simmons on most of the episodes, not all of them. And he gathers people around him to talk through at quite length with a lot of nuance about popular films, with lots of good trivia, a few clips. And I just find it very, very listenable. And Bill Simmons, a bit like Ira Glass, He's got a sort of imperfect yet very soothing voice, and I'm a big fan of his.
Jason, did it remind you at all of Jamie Lannister before he lost his hand? Little shades of Jamie Lannister?
You mean in terms of like the fighting prowess?
And the leadership.
Jamie Lannister was respected, but like widely reviled. Maximus just generates
he's beloved.
Respect from everyone who is around him. He just has that magnetism. So I would say that Maximus like is far surpasses Jamie Lannister in terms of like the respect that he garners from his compatriots and the leadership that he exudes.
To your point about Gibson, I don't think Gibson can pull this off because Russell has a bulk to him. Like there are a couple scenes when you see him with his shirt off and he's got like the big back muscles where he's just sort of holding it forward. Gibson in Braveheart, for example, he's too small. That's like a soldier, but you need a different body to be a gladiator. You need strength.
There's Bill Simmons and his chums talking about Gladiator. Before I let you all go, I think we should just reflect for a minute or so on the issues that are facing people in our sector as others. Emergency funding, there's the audio and radio emergency fund, there's special money coming from the audio content fund. What do we think of the way the sector as a whole is supporting the people who work in it? Let me go to you first, Matt.
I think it's pretty good, actually. Inventing pools of cash to distribute for any reason is difficult, even if you want to do it and want to find out a way to do it. So I think what the Radio Academy, Audio UK and co have managed to do with that fund's great. ACF, Audio Content Fund, you know, nearly 400 grand they're going to give out for Corona programming that sort of comes from this period. It's not particularly about coronavirus, but about this period. It's really valuable. I mean, for Fun Kids, we've got a sports show, which is from, you know, a new indie, and they're making great material for us. And then we've, on the other end of the spectrum, we've just had confirmation about a series we're going to be running that's made by a kind of community group in the Southwest that run a sort of children's online station, and they're making features. And this will help fund them and their operation, which they wouldn't be able to do because of all the things that are happening. So it's, you know, it's a different way of getting cash to people. So I think it's been pretty impressive.
I mean, on the technology side, people have really come together. Radio TechCon, we've been able, because obviously you've got engineers from all of the main groups involved, we've been able to offer help to community and hospital radio, and also get together a list of all the technology freelancers who are around to sort of say, hey, if you need an extra pair of hands and you want to hire in some help, then we're there. It is really good that the audio support funds are there. If I may be slightly controversial, I mean, it's excellent. BBC, Folder Media, well done, Matt. Audible, Audio UK, Real World have all contributed. Just have a little think on that list about the major broadcasters who perhaps haven't yet taken part. It's a shame, I think. I mean, every business is able to do what they like, obviously, but I think really massive props to those organisations that have been able to find a little bit of cash, because the grants that are going out to people are up to £1,000, and I think most of them are more around £500. So it is small chunks of cash. Everything helps, of course, but I don't imagine that the donations from each organisation necessarily had to be massive.
I completely agree with what Matt and Anna said. I think these pots of money are excellent. It's not something that we've personally competed for. But I think the industry as a whole has responded quite well. It's going to be tricky. It's going to be hard for some indies. It's going to be hard for some people in this business. And there's many people out there who are far less fortunate than ourselves and are finding work is drying up. But on the other hand, there are transferable skills even within the industry. You mentioned right at the start that we're predominantly a sports indie. But in an emergency, you know, it's a question of getting things done, whether it's, as Anna's mentioned earlier, just making sure you can get a technology going that allows people to broadcast from home somehow, somewhere, and in somewhat decent quality, or even just transferring your teams to keep them in work, really. It's a tough time for a lot of people out there, and the loss of even occasional freelance shifts is going to hit people hard. So we've even managed within the industry to transfer our 606 phone-in team have been also doing a coronavirus call a doctor style program because, you know, we've got the infrastructure there to do phone-in shows. They don't have to be about sport. So hopefully the quick thinking has helped some people keep their jobs, and the audio funds have been fantastic, and it's good to see so much money being poured in from those sources. But let's not forget there's going to be some people out there who are really going to struggle through this, are struggling already, and let's hope they can come out the other side somehow.
I think that's a very good point on which to end it. Simon Cross, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Matt Deegan, as well. Thank you, Anne Charles. And thanks to our puppet master, who is Stuart Clarkson. We'll have another roundtable, God willing, in June. Until then, as everyone says these days, stay safe.
OK, raise your glass. So let's toast together 65 years of FM. Yes, after experiments, the UK's first FM transmitters were switched on in Kent, bringing the BBC Light programme, the Third programme and the Home Service to London and much of South East England. Back then we only used 88 to 94.6, that little bit of the VHF band.
This is Radio 4 from the South and West.
And I have a cutting here from this week in 1955 all about that. He says, to mark the opening of the new service, a number of special broadcasts have been arranged. And these include Harold Bishop, the Director of Technical Services. He's speaking in a programme called At Home and Abroad, all about VHF. And then you've got the Chief Engineer on the In Town Tonight programme. And then the DG, Sir Ian Jacob, is going to be speaking on the Light programme. So clearly they're getting very enthusiastic about it all. The transmitter in the South back then in 1955 was the first of 10. Pontop Pike for the North East and Wenvo for South Wales and the West of England followed 8 months later, and it took another 3 years before they started to experiment in stereo.
As you know, stereophonic sound requires two channels to represent the two ears. For my right ear, I am going to use the sound from a television receiver, but you could equally well use any ordinary sound receiver tuned to the third program. For my left ear, I am going to use a sound receiver tuned to the Home Service.
And welcome to listeners on VHF who have just joined Radio 1, not only for the Top 40, but for the rest of this evening. And don't forget, you can hear the nation's top chart show in super stereo on VHF.
At the outset, of course, the very first BBC local stations were only on VHF FM. They later got the AM relays.
Radio Humberside, VHF 96.9, medium wave 202, radio fusion, channel B.
It took about 30 years before FM really took over from AM, and by that stage in the 80s, it seemed pretty silly to be simulcasting the same thing on both. So this week in 1986, we had one of the first commercial radio UK trials, splitting the AM from the FM at Capital.
1 minute from now, Capital Radio will split.
For the first time ever, different programmes will be broadcast simultaneously on Capital's AM and FM frequencies.
If your radio is tuned to Capital on 1548 AM, after the 10 o'clock news, you'll hear Sax on Sunday with John Sax.
If your radio's tuned to Capital on 95.8 FM, you'll hear Capital's new Sunday station, CFM, in super stereo.
Almost all radios can pick up Capital on both AM and on FM. For information on how to retune, call 01 388 8061.
Capital Radio will now split frequencies.
The trial in AM-FM splitting at Capital, and of course in due course they chose to split but not use that programming strategy. 6 years ago, the Heart brand started to be carried at last on the stations which had been owned by GMG. Global put Heart on the Real Radio regional stations.
Heart is coming with more music variety at 6 a.m.
Hi, this is Toby Anstis. I'll be here every weekday morning on Heart, your new radio station. Join me from 10 for more music variety and your chance to win £100,000 with our big money game, Who's on Heart?
Heart expanding to another 9 million TSA on the GMG stations this week in 2014. 1978 now, and the Radio 1 Breakfast Show gets its third ever presenter. First there was Tony Blackburn, then there was Noel Edmonds, and this week, 42 years ago...
Now then, I don't want you to let this go any further, but I spent most of last night considering my first words for this programme, because I realised they had to be quite prolific. So, here goes. Welcome to The Breakfast Show.
Vaguely trendy, Radio 1.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning. It seems strange because at 3 minutes past seven or thereabouts, up until now, it's been the time that I've split and gone home. It's the opposite end of the clock. Oh. We got plenty of good sounds for you. Stick around.
Dave Lee Travis, DLT, starting his stint on the Radio 1 Breakfast Show this week in 1978.
Quack, quack, oops.
Monty Modlin died this week 26 years ago. He was a journalist with the Evening Standard and the Daily Mail, also becoming a roving reporter for the BBC on the Today programme and Start the Week. And he was also with Capital Radio, with links into their breakfast show. Here he is on day one of that radio station, complete with Dropout.
Here I am, David, with a crowd of people about 60 or 70, including lots of school children. Now, children, did you know that there's a terrible shortage of policemen in London and that they need a lot more wages, they say? Do you think we ought to have more policemen?
Yes.
How old are you, darling?
11.
11? Just on your way to school?
Yes.
What do you think about the police? Think that they deserve more money, dear?
Yeah, because they do a good job.
They do?
Yeah.
Do you think it's a dangerous job?
Yes.
Yeah, there are lots of people... There's an older lady here, grey hair, looking very smiling, very nice. Aren't you, love?
Yes.
What do you think about our policemen? Do you think
they're wonderful. They're wonderful. They do a good job.
Do you think they deserve a lot more money?
Yes, of course they do. And the nurses as well.
Yes. Well, yes, it's policemen we're worried about because we can't get them.
Yeah, I know.
Now, our biggest man. What do you reckon a policeman ought to earn a week?
£25.
What?
£100.
£35. Someone said £100. Well, they deserve every penny. So, from here, right out in Euston Station, to you, David.
Thank you very much indeed, Monty. When you get back to the studio, I'll give you some bicarb for those hiccups. 26 past
Monty Modlin on day one of Capital. He died this week in 1994. So with Roman Kemp beginning his Capital London Breakfast Show 3 years ago with Vic Hope.
Good morning. Welcome to your Monday Capital Breakfast with me, Roman Kemp, Vic Hope, Sunny J. This show is just absolutely flying by today.
It's gone fast, isn't it?
Very fast.
Very quick, yeah.
Been enjoying it. It's nice to have lots of lovely listeners with us, yeah, because we're broadcasting live around the whole of the UK now, so if you're new to the show...
Roger Day making his radio debut on the new Swinging Radio England 54 years ago.
Fog will blanket most of England tonight, excluding the Midlands, where slight rainfall is forecast. Tomorrow, expect fog into the morning with a gradual clearing by midday. Tonight's low 34 degrees. Tomorrow, look for a high of 57 degrees Fahrenheit.
Mohammed El Fayed buying Viva, the London AM service, for £3 million 24 years ago.
Good morning. Thank you for
Mike
choosing
Smith
us.
Beginning Radio 1 Breakfast 34 years ago.
What's on the way this morning? I've got a rude awakening coming up before 7:30 in which someone gets extremely violent. That'll be with you at about 7:25 this morning.
David Hamilton launching Splash FM in Worthing 17 years ago.
Well, that was Kylie Minogue and Come Into My World, and before that it was the Doobie Brothers and Listen to the Music. The very first day of 107.7 Splash FM and our very first guest...
And
very
Churchill
guest.
Addressing the nation for VE Day 75 years ago.
This is London. The Prime Minister, the Right Honourable Winston Churchill.
Yesterday morning at 2:41 a.m. at General Eisenhower's headquarters, General Jodl... the representative...
BBC programmes had been interrupted on the 7th of May 1945 to say that the day after would be VE Day and that Churchill would speak at 3 o'clock. They had his speech on air, preceded by a fanfare, and then the BBC went into a sequence of celebratory programmes. Broadcasting House floodlit for the first time since 1937. And what's more, the BBC's listener research department recorded the best ever programme satisfaction figures. Those are this week's Radio Moments.
We must now devote all our strength and resources to the completion of our tasks, both at home and abroad. Advance Britannia. Long live the cause of freedom. God save the King.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Mick Hazard.